our silliness patiently. And Spencer is a singer-songwriter who is has performed in Hudson before at the Hudson Opera House, and is here and is performs his mostly, if not all, his own songs, and is going to be giving a songwriting workshop on the 15th and 16th at Stageworks. So welcome, Spencer. You're going to have to share a mic with us.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
And you have a new record out, don't you?
I do. It's just been mixed and mastered. So that is actually, Vagabond is the one that came out. That came out about a year and a half ago. And we've done really well with that too. We had one song that was for adult contemporary was, I think, the number one song for about 25 weeks on the radio, which was really cool. If you went to a deli in New York, you probably, you might have heard me. And I just finished mixing and mastering my new one, which is going to be coming out in the beginning of next year, too. So I'm excited for that.
Great. And I understand you're going to be performing at the Hudson Opera House Gala on September 29th.
Yes. Yeah, I'm up here a lot, which is great because it's my favorite town in New York. So
how did you get to be connected with Hudson?
I came through a couple of years ago. A friend of mine, Susan Warner, who's a great singer-songwriter who's played at the Opera House, had recommended, and this is years, I think, before I even had signed with Concord Records, my record labeler, and it just come through. It was actually a rainy November night, and I just remember passing through the town and looking in a window, and there were just like some really cool people playing cards with some Bob Marley playing, and I was like, this is a cool town, and I kept going for a walk, and I just fell in love with it. That was probably, I want to say, 4 years ago, maybe. And, I live on the East Coast again. I live in the city, but I come up as often. I mean, you'll see me all the time hanging up. It's my favorite town. I can't wait to live up here full time.
Oh, great. let us know when that happens. I hate to ask this, but which comes first, the lyrics or the music?
You know, it really depends on the type of song and what you're trying to get across with the song. I think if it is if it's a song that's more rhythmically or melodically driven, like a lot of pop songs, I often find that for myself or other people, you're starting with the melody first. But it really, I mean, it depends on the writer. I think for a lot of the great Broadway writers like Rodgers and Hammerstein, they almost always started with the lyrics first. And it really depends if the song is really there to move the plot of something forward, then I would probably say you want to start with that first. But you know, if you're doing like a Rihanna or you're doing something that's very rhythm and blues, or even for the Beatles, I think a lot of their songs, they would have like nonsensical lyrics. And then for them, you know, the melody and ultimately the melody is, you know, in a song, the most important thing, but pretty close second with the lyrics.
So do you write only for yourself or have you written for other people?
No, I've been actually, that's what's been so cool is I've been had the pleasure of writing for a lot of other people recently. Through my record label in LA, but I got to go to London last year in the spring and wrote the music for my first West End musical, which I actually got also headline, which was really cool. And that was a Ziegfeld Follies burlesque show. So it was like, what's fun about writing for other people is I get to write in a style or genre that would be completely different from what I might do for myself. So it really keeps me on my toes.
And do you compose on a piano?
Yeah, I compose on a piano just to mix it up, which is, I think, one thing in the workshop that I'm really excited to talk about is everyone can get blocked, whether you're a beginning songwriter or whether you've done it for 30 years. And I think, if anything, I want to be just kind of a little bit of a pocket muse there to kind of maybe reignite some different ways to do it. Because I'm a terrible guitar player, but lately I've been writing more on guitar because I don't have very good faculties on it. It actually forces me to make creative decisions and go for simple choices that maybe if I was on the piano, I'd try to be a little bit trickier harmonically with. And I actually have a little program that only cost a couple $100 for my laptop called Logic. So you can program Middle Eastern drum beats and all these things too. And I'm not very good with computers, but it's a great way to experiment also building a song from a groove and see what happens as opposed to me, because my favorite way of writing mostly is just to be at the piano and come up with the melody like that. But lately, I think just to mix it up for me is I've actually been experimenting with a couple other different ways.
Now, if somebody wants to take your songwriting workshop, what kind of background or experience do they need?
You know, I'm really hoping, my goal is for it to be something that could be really accessible for a really wide range of skill level. You know, I think some of the same things really apply. And I took an acting class recently, not necessarily because I even want to become like a full-time actor, but I just wanted to enrich myself and grow. And we had people in that class who were seasoned, like on Broadway performers, and then people like me who are just doing it to check it out. And I think hopefully if you have a good teacher, which hopefully people will find me to be, there'll be something for everyone to take away from it.
Have you done these workshops before?
I've done some things similar to it. This will be actually very specific, the way that I'm doing this over the two-day period, but I'm actually going to San Francisco to speak for the West Coast Songwriters Association next week, and they're going to talk to me about my creative process and interview me about that. I think what I would love to do, too, is just to help people find your own, too, and what I want to make sure people know is that I would never try to be steering anyone towards one specific genre or encouraging them to take on my artistic sensibility. It's really what I'd love to do is, on top of going through some of the basic tools for songwriting, is examine some examples of great songwriting over the last 80 years to see what these things have in common. And really, so, and hopefully in that, no matter whether you're a beginning guitar playing singer-songwriter who's never written a song or you've written a lot, it can be inspirational and really motivate you to try something new.
You know, it's funny because a lot of the songs, I just read a biography of Stephen Sondheim, and there's a lot in there about how he wrote certain songs and the creative process in general. And so many great song standards that we think of have come out of shows that were written specifically in the context for certain specific characters in a play to suddenly burst into song. And but they hold up, nevertheless, out of that context, which is amazing. And he talks a lot about Send in the Clowns and how that came to be written and how he wrote he found it easier to write once a show was cast, because then he could hear the song in his head in somebody's voice, and that helped him a lot. You hear the song often in your own voice, so that's somewhat easier, I would think.
It's easier in certain ways, and then it also makes it harder, I think, because it's harder to get the distance from it, you know. And I think that's what's really great about writing for other people, or having other people even sing my things, is, you know, as I can find my own way to phrase it or sell the song. And sometimes mm-hmm. I've written things that were maybe not necessarily the best song, but because of the way I set up the song and the story before. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. But that's been a really interesting thing, is actually to separate the craft, which is why you don't have to be a singer, you know, to take the class as well, to separate the craft of actually mm-hmm. writing the song from doing that. But what's really cool about the Sondheim, especially that you mentioned, is just his ability, and for all the really timely Broadway songs, that they can be taken out of that context. And if you know them in the show, it makes even more sense. But even without that, there's still such an intention about what they're trying to accomplish.
You know the song, My Funny Valentine. I was astounded when I saw a production. I think it's Babes in Arms. She suddenly bursts into song, and the character she's singing to is named Valentine. So the song takes out on a whole new meaning when you see it that way.
When you were growing up, did you have favorite songwriters?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, I think I'm also doing a one-man show in Hudson. We're still working on the date, called Music for Escape Artists, up here in October, which I'm really excited about. But
Harry Houdini thing?
Yeah. Yeah, musically. Yeah, basically. Cause, for me, anything that was about kind of transporting me to another world, especially because I grew up in a very religious town, so we only had access to one video store that only carried G-rated movies. So MGM musicals were really what got me started. And so anything that was like South Pacific, I didn't care about the story, about the war, and I just wanted to see them escape to the island. Anything that was about being transported to another world, or Singing in the Rain, I didn't really care about the story, just the dance numbers, you know. So those were the songs that I really first fell in love with, is the Great American Songbook. But since then, I mean, you know, for me, I really don't think in terms of genre. I just think in terms of great storytelling and original melodies and things. So, I mean, I could put on Joni Mitchell next to Judy Garland, next to Radiohead, next to, you know, I really, I think my goal, and I think the best songs and shows I'll do that is to really transport people into a world and make them believe that world melodically as well as lyrically. So Cole Porter obviously is, I mean, I think for any lyricist, for me, Cole Porter and I would say Paul Simon together are two of my absolute favorites as far as lyricists go.
Do you write a lot of songs?
I do. A lot of them are bad, which is another thing I love to talk to people about. Is that, you know, really it's just about writing, because you can't write a good song if you're afraid of writing badly, because in order to, you know, get to the clear water, the muddy water has to run out first. And I try to write one at least a week. And like I said, a lot of them are total tossaways, but you never know. And some idea also that may seem like not really worth pursuing to you, it's just great to see it through to its finish, and then you could play it to someone else and they think it's the best thing you've ever written.
I've seen you perform a couple of times at the Opera House. I remember one night when it was so hot that,
oh, wow. Yeah.
That we all took these paper fans left over from something. I don't know. We were all sitting there fanning ourselves. But I've seen you perform with you playing the piano and a couple of, you know, a guitar player and percussion and some other instruments. But I'm curious to know, on these two recordings, that you have full orchestration. And I don't see any place on your new record where it gives credit to any orchestrator. So I wondered who actually does the orchestration.
Well, I do all the basic arrangements for my thing as far as, and in the last thing I did, I produced it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with some other people as far as making up the beats and co-production, but it was the first time I took over all the reins. But I've co-produced every record I've done, and A Movie of Your Life, those are my string arrangements on there. And on this one, my guitarist, cellist, who has played with me, who he did some of the string arrangements on there too, and also a guy named Stuart Bogey. So it's a great collaborative thing, because which is another part people should know quite up front, is I've gone to college for a couple semesters for music training, but I started working before I could ever graduate. So for me, that's the thing, is I feel like these rules apply whether you are a fully schooled orchestrator or not. You know, I think that's why I want to encourage people of all different levels, is I think hopefully there'll be something for everyone. But what's been great to work with them is I've grown on the bandstand. So even though I didn't go to school, I would write out, you know, a cello part and say, oh, I'm kind of hearing this line. And then my cellist will say, okay, well, that's physically impossible to play. So let me show you how to write it out in a way that actually is doable. And through that, even though I didn't get to finish college, for me, I've just learned so much in the doing of it too. So for the Vagabond, there's three of us. I did some string interludes, and Yair and Stuart.
But you probably started playing the piano when you were very young.
I didn't actually, which is another thing about encouraging people who are maybe a little bit older, feeling like, oh, I shouldn't get into it. I didn't really start seriously playing piano. We all played a little bit hymn-wise, but just kind of blocky chords. But I didn't really start playing piano until I was about 19. Yeah, so that's also encouraging people that it's never too late to dive in and do what you want to do.
And you kind of got your start on a television show. Is that true?
I suppose, yeah. I had been playing a lot of piano bars before that, which once again, at the time, now I can read music and I can play in lots of different keys, but I could only play in C. I learned the Lush Life in C by ear, which is actually much harder than playing it in D flat, if anyone knows the song. But as a joke, my friend signed me up for an audition for Star Search on CBS, and then I went down, and then actually got on, and I was like, okay, well, I'll do it once, and they'll vote me off, because no one's going to be interested in my voice on a show like that. And the judges never liked me, but the home audiences kept voting me back on, and I was like, wow, this isn't really a joke anymore. And I actually wanted to lose, because you were tied into kind of a crappy recording contract that I wasn't really excited about. And so I did lose. If you believe in anything enough, it'll happen. That was the first thing, is I went right back to playing these piano bars as if nothing had happened, except I had a fan, some girls making, you know, fan clubs for me in Iowa and places like that. It was a very slow thing, though. The gigs just got a little bit better, and you know, was signed to a major label record deal in New York. I got dropped. I moved to Los Angeles and started from scratch, got signed to my present record label deal. So it's been a lot of peaks and valleys in my career, but I'm so grateful to say I get to do it for a living. It's such an honor.
Move to Hudson. What we really need here is a piano bar. Seriously.
I would you know what? If I could open a piano bar and have it here, I would be over the moon.
We'll help you. I would like to take a break, if that's okay, and play something from Vagabond. Is there something you would recommend?
Sure. The first track's good.
Okay. Here we come. Till You Come to Me. Spencer Day.
A sleepless night in the city, no peace and quiet in the city. It's hotter than the water from a boiler in the basement of hell. In this low and whack of broken down hotel, counting the cracks on the ceiling, flat on my back, and I'm feeling lower than the roaches in the tunnels of the one and the nine. And the clock says that I'm half past losing my mind. Through the tick-tock tick, I can hear the faucet drip. When the neighbors brawl, I can hear them through the wall. But I'm waiting, I keep waiting, 'cause I want you, I want you back again. I can't remember when you and I were one. And I want to, I want to change your mind. So I'm gonna bide my time, bearing my misery, till you come to me. High noon, same room, this is when it gets so suffocating. The air sits heavy like the weight of my regret forever letting you go. And it don't matter whether the windows are open or closed. There's a beep, beep, beep from the traffic in the street, and a bang, bang, bang like a hammer in my brain as I'm fading, going crazy. 'Cause I want you, I want you back again. I can't remember when you and I were one. And I want to, I wanna change your mind. So I'm gonna bide my time, bearing my misery, till you come to me. back to me. Oh, no, no, just you wait and see. You'll come back to me, baby. Just you wait and see. You'll come back to me.
You're listening to the WGXC Afternoon Show. I'm Tom Rowe.
I'm Richard Roth.
I'm Ellen Thurston, and we're here with Spencer Day.
Hello.
We've been talking about the songwriting workshop that Spencer's going to be giving at Stageworks on September 15th and 16th. If you had one piece of advice to give to songwriters, can you tell us what that might be? Not to put you on the spot.
No, not at all. I'm just thinking I have a lot. Maybe some of it's not good. I'd like to think it's good. I think about this too, because I was signed in a record deal with a very large, powerful record company whose name I will leave out, but that, let's just say they're universally known. And I went through a development thing, which is, once again, it was their effort to say, we don't know what to do with this guy. He's not really jazz. He's not pop. We like him, but just be different. And a development deal basically is like artist purgatory, which means they're like, don't know what they want to do with you. They take you off of the market and then give you all this advice about the types of songs you should be writing, what you should be wearing, everything. And I had a woman, actually Susan Warner was my performance coach that they brought in to do it. And I remember her first lesson to me was she's like, forget about them. Whatever they're saying, she's like, nobody knows what you want like you do. And she's like, if I could go back and do one thing, it would be to not care so much about what other people think. And that may not seem related to songwriting, but in the same way as anything, any true expression. And in this day and age, there's so much pressure for what a hit is. And I think that's what hopefully I want to do in the class is talk about. Here's the conventions of it. If you want to write a hook, here's how much repetition should go on. Here's what you want to do with your lyrics, you know, and knowing what you want the song to accomplish. But at the same time, really make sure you're writing it for yourself first and foremost, because that really is what translates. And people can sniff it when it sounds like it was written like a commercial, like it was meant to sell something, and when there's been a lot of hands on it, even for songs I've been a part of, my label has had me set up that they really want it to be a hit. And it's ultimately people want to touch the human heart and they want to feel something authentic. So just really trusting that your expression truly is unique, I think, and not feeling like, oh, I want to do a polka album, I shouldn't do that, no one's going to be interested, you know, maybe not, but I think that that's the main advice I would do, is if I could go back, would just be to stick to my artistic guns more about what made me happy. And that's ultimately the main person on your deathbed that you have to impress, is like, when I was at the piano, did it fill me with joy? And because that joy translates, you know, and I think other people will feel that if you do. So that was kind of a long-winded advice, but be yourself. I know that sounds cliche, but...
Is there anything you want to say about the structure of the workshop?
Yeah, well, it'll be broken up in 2 days. Lunch is included, which will be a very good lunch. So that should be cool. But it's going to be 2 days. It's going to be broken up with some time for listening. So I'm going to play not a great deal, but some great music over the past 80 years to really find what these songs have in common. My hope is that if people feel comfortable, and once again, anyone can come at whatever level they're at, but if people do have songs that are a work in progress or even a finished song that they'd like to bring in and kind of get some feedback from the class members and myself, they're very welcome to do that, and I would love that. I probably will play a couple songs of my own, and it will be kind of broken up into different sections about talking about melody, about music, and actually talking a little bit about plot and storytelling, and also just really honing in on what it is you're trying to do with the song. What are you trying to say, and what are you trying to accomplish, though? So, and then there'll be a couple like fun creative exercises too, as far as that, you know, hopefully it'll take 15 minutes of just creative writing so they can try. And then the goal is, because it's over 2 days, and ideally, you know, you do this over a month and people would come every week with a new assignment, but because I have to go to Nashville right after that for a writing session, what I think will be exciting about this is I just want to leave people with some new tools that they can employ, whether they've written a lot or not, and that they can take and incorporate and get them to start thinking about things in a different way. And, you know, as a teacher, of course, I learned so much in the process of doing it as well. So.
And it's every more every day from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., is that right?
Yeah, I think it'll depend a little bit on what the full class size is, but at least till 3 or 3:30. So it'll be a good chunk of time, and then we'll break for lunch, which, you know, I think what I've discovered, any more than that creatively, you know, gets to make your head start right to explode.
It's going to be at Stageworks on Cross Street near the railroad station here in Hudson. And the number to call is 822-9667. And if the fee seems not possible for you, I'm told that it is somewhat negotiable.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, I, you know, if people really want to be a part of it, you know, we'd love to just hear what they can do and see if we
exactly
can work with them too.
Right.
For me, it's really the joy of talking about it. It's something I just love so much, and honestly love hearing other people's expressions and experiences with it as well too, that it's you know, I'm not here to to make bank and then take off. So I really hope people, even if they're interested, will call just to find out more information.
Great.
This is a little off the subject of the workshop, but you mentioned Nashville. When you go to Nashville, what's the process? What goes on there?
Well, I'm actually going to be meeting with some new writers, which I haven't written with before, which is kind of, it's like dating. It's a chemistry thing, and it's amazing with Nashville because it is a workhorse town. So you get in there and you say hello and catch up for a second, but within 5 to 10 minutes, you're writing. So I always try to come in with a couple ideas of things I think might make for a funny song or a melody idea I might have had in my head. And it's a very different process down there. My friend Cliff, who I write with, who's a great Nashville writer, anytime I want to use like a jazz seventh chord or something, he calls it an out-of-town chord, which is the Nashville term. Because, and I love, because once again, it's a whole different music approach than LA or New York, you know. But there's so many talented people. What amazed me is it's not just country western. There's such a great jazz scene there, and there's literally music on every corner. I mean, just that the musical talent down there is really amazing. But typically when you're doing it, you get into it pretty fast, and I think in that Nashville way, the few trips I've been there is like, you don't leave the room until you finish it either, so you could start at 9 a.m. and be there till 2 a.m., you know.
But you mostly write by yourself, don't you?
Mostly, yeah. Yeah, I think this is actually to write potentially a Christmas song for another artist, and then potentially for myself too, because I have very little ego about it. Like, if I can write it best by myself, that's great. As I think Cole Porter said, he left a Rodgers and Hammerstein show and they asked him how he liked it, and he said, "Oh, I thought it was great. I just don't see why it takes two men to do one man's job." And but I personally, you know, if I can get the best result by myself, more power to me. But if that other person, even if they provide the extra 20% that's going to take the song to being truly great, then it's worth it, you know? And I'm in that sense, I try to be very egoless when I write about just whatever gets the best result and being open to different ideas. And I think since I didn't get to formally go to school, though I've certainly taken a lot of lessons and classes since then, for me, that's the continuing education as a songwriter, is the learning never stops.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
We
know we're going to be seeing you on September 29th at the Opera House Gala. Looking forward to that. And looking forward to when you open the first piano bar in Hudson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Stay tuned.
Should we play one more song on the way out? You want to recommend a song?
Sure. What about, let's see. What about, which one do you like?
Well, I like them all. It's hard to choose.
How about 14?
Oh, kind of. That's good. Oops. Better Way.
Too many people seeking power and fame, stepping on anyone that gets in the way. Now I know how they wanna play that game, but I wanna find a better way. Too many people living on the street, too many people taking more than they need.
Don't want to complain about society, I just want to find a better way. Cause this is a time for an evolution, this is a time for a compromise. And I know it hurts to grow, but the status quo, you know, it always comes with a price. I'm talking about changing the way we're living, I'm talking about more than the left or right. And we gotta comprehend, it's not us or them, it's a human race trying to survive. Too many people waging holy jihad, too many killing in the name of a god, too many people trying to do his job, and we gotta find a better way. Too many soldiers marching off to war, too many nations trying to settle a score, when every battle only leads to more, we gotta find a better way. This is a time for an evolution, this is a time for a compromise. And I know it hurts to grow, but the status quo, you know it always comes with a price. I'm talking about changing the way we live on, I'm talking about more than the left or right. We gotta comprehend, it's not us or them, it's a human race trying to survive. We're gonna find a better way, I know we're gonna find a better way. And I know you heard it before, but I say it once more, cause we're gonna find a better way. It's a human race trying to survive. Oh, 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 we're gonna find a better way. I know we're gonna find a better way. And I know you heard it before, but I say it once more, cause we're gonna find a better way. We're gonna find a better way. We're gonna find a better way.
Spencer Day on the WGXC Afternoon Show. I'm Tom Rowe.
I'm Richard Roth.
I'm Ellen Thurston.
And Ellen, did you hear that Governor Cuomo named a state poet laureate yesterday?
Yes, you told me. What's her name again?
Marie Howell, the state poet, not poet laureate. She's the state poet, and Allison Laureus is the state author. I don't know. Do you know Allison Laureus?
I know the name, but I'm not familiar with her work.
Well, we've got a little background on them up at the WGXC website. Allison Lurie is author of 10 novels, a short story collection, and several children's books, nonfiction,